Hello, I'm Eric Corman, Communications Director at League of Education Voters. In this podcast, we interview policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create a brighter future for every Washington student. Robert Hand is the Northwest Educational Services District 189 Regional Teacher of the Year and the 2019 Washington State Teacher of the Year. He teaches Family and Consumer Sciences at Mount Vernon High School in the Mount Vernon School District. Robert, congratulations on being 2019 Teacher of the Year.
Thank you very much. It's an honor that I will carry with me, and it's a privilege that I will not take for granted.
What do you think you'll want to do as your first priority as 2019 State Teacher of the Year?
Well, the thing I'm most excited to do is really to learn more. I'm looking forward to getting to traveling and visiting the other regional teachers of the year around the state. You know, I'm sure that there are things that people that I'll speak with will learn from me, but I think I'm going to learn a lot more in this adventure than maybe other people will from me, and I'm excited about that. I'm always looking for ways to improve. I'll never be the best at what I do, but to be better every day than I was the day before, and so I'm looking forward to being able to do that every day as I go through this adventure.
If you could do one thing to improve teaching across Washington State, what would you change?
I think that we need to be able to have more time in schools for teachers to be able to spend getting to know their kids and building relationships with their kids in the classroom. It's very different if you go to elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, what the pressures are that teachers have to be able to fit into a very limited time in the day. And I feel like it gets more and more over time. We have more pressure to do more with less time. A lot of times the more that we're being asked to do is content driven. We're looking at data and test scores and all of these things about what are we doing to make sure that kids are successful in schools. And I think that being successful as a kid in school, there's a lot more to that than just what are your test scores and what are you showing us that you learned. We have to remember that we're here to teach kids, and that means teaching the entire kid, the whole child. Helping them to, as I said, for myself, a goal for myself is always be better today than I was the day before, and helping kids understand that content is part of that, and that, you know, they're going to be learning a lot of things like that in their classes. But the pressure is there so much that we have teachers that are looking at tests that are coming up and then kind of working backwards from that. I have this test, then these standards that they have to meet. So how am I going to teach with the amount of time that I have so that they'll learn how to perform on these tests and do, you know, I think that it gets harder and harder to find time when you talk to teachers about building relationships and getting to know your kids and spending time talking to them and hearing about their families and their backgrounds and their histories and talking to their families. And, you know, a lot of times teachers will say, well, when do I have time to do that? I mean, look at the list of things that I have to accomplish. That would be great if I had time, but I don't have time. And if we were able to provide equal time, I think, to being able to do both of those things, it kind of feels like we start to get our priorities backwards a little bit, that, you know, it's kind of like we have to teach them this content, these standards, and these test items, and that's what we have to do. And if there's time for the other human aspect of it, oh, we might get to that if we have time. To me, that's backwards. I don't even get to my syllabus and all those other things until much later in the typical beginning of a class at the semester. And my kids always kind of, they're conditioned to expect that at the beginning. They say, well, we're not going to do the syllabus until like 2 weeks in. No, because we have other stuff that we need to do first. And that involves getting to know each other and getting to know the kids in the classroom around you and learning their names. And that's where everything starts. And I think a lot of times people don't realize how much more content you're going to get into. It's like, oh, you're spending all that time doing that. How do you fit all the content? Well, I feel like I get more out of kids learning-wise when we actually are intentional and take the time to actually build those relationships and have that basis of understanding. And it's an investment, I think, at the beginning that pays off in the long run. But providing space and time and opportunity for teachers to be able to feel like not only that they can do that, but that they should be doing that. And to not always have this pressure that if I take a day away from doing this content to actually get to spend some time playing some games with my kids, right? Where people say like, oh, you're playing games. Well, yeah, we're playing games because it's a relational aspect and it helps us to get to know each other. And there's learning happening in there as well. It may not be tested later, but the stuff that's going to happen as a result of that and the environment that we're going to build in our room, all those other things I think are going to be strengthened as a result of taking the time to do that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're front-loading basically the relationship aspect so that you can go faster down the road. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I was thinking as you were describing this. You know, what would it look like to carve out time to create these relationships? But it makes perfect sense. Do it at the beginning of the year so that you can move together faster. And then when a new student comes into your classroom, do you take some time to do that again, maybe on a slightly more truncated basis for the new student?
Yeah. And it's different depending on the class. I teach very, very different classes across the board. And so the way we do that is different depending on the class that we're in. But yeah, we do take time to do that because, yeah, along the way, I can't teach every kid the same stuff the same way at the same pace and expect all of them to learn in the same way. It just doesn't work that way. And so knowing that my goal is for every kid that I have in my class to learn what I'm trying to teach them, I mean, both in terms of content and just in terms of learning who they are and how they fit into the world around them and how to just be a better version of themselves every day, that looks different for every kid in every class. And I don't know, it's fun and enjoyable for all of us. Like, kids want to come to school, they want to come to class because they have a place where they feel comfortable and they know that the people around them feel comfortable and that they know that I care about them and I know they're there and that I know when they're not there, that their presence is missed when it's not there. It isn't just, you know, last time you were here, you missed a worksheet, here's your worksheet, make sure to make it. It's last time you were not here, how are you? What was going on? Are you okay? Checking in with them on a personal level, and that way, really it's an investment up front and it pays off in so many different ways along the way. And that's why we're there. I mean, I think, as just about any teacher, why do they teach? I doubt they're going to say, because I care so much about the content. I mean, they care about the content. I'm passionate about the stuff that I teach, mm-hmm. but I'm more passionate about the kids that I teach. And the stuff that I teach is kind of a vehicle that I use to actually teach kids. I think it's important for us to keep those priorities in mind, that we're there for kids first, and the content is the vehicle we use to teach those kids.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Let's pull up for just a moment and look at the statewide landscape here. The legislature is going to be convening in just a few weeks. If you could say to the legislature what they should invest in, if you could pick one or two things, what would you tell them?
I think one thing that I would tell them would be continuing to invest in career and technical education. Mm-hmm. We need a variety of different types of learning for kids to have, and you know, career and technical education programs are incredibly important in schools, and there are many schools that are lacking programs because of a lack of funding. Career and technical education just takes a different level of funding to be able to do the things that we need to do. Like, if I teach a cooking class and I don't have money to buy food to teach a cooking class, I can't teach kids how to cook from a textbook. It just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to have the supplies and the operating costs and all of that to be able to run those programs effectively. And just continuing to fund things like the arts. It's not always just about core subjects. Core subjects are incredibly important and valuable, but they're a part of a kid's education. Those things outside of that are what kept me interested in school and engaged in school, and I don't know where I would have been without those kinds of things, and the funding is incredibly important for those to survive. I think the other thing that I would say is providing resources for mental health support and counseling in schools. I mean, we're all stretched so thin. Teachers, administrators, counselors, everybody, we have so many things to fit into such a short period of time that we're all trying to do the best that we can. But, you know, counselors, for how many students we have in a school and how few counselors we have, and I look at what they do every day and I'm just in awe of what they're able to do with the time that they have and the resources that they have. But a lot of times, you know, it's, I have to get these kids scheduled for classes and make sure that they're on track to graduate, kind of lining up all of the logistics of that. If you think of the word counselor, and then you ask, when is there time for a kid who's having a hard day that maybe they need to spend time talking about it with the counselor? And there isn't time for that a lot of the time, you know. And our counselors at my school, they're great. They work on scheduling and doing all of those other things, and then also going out and finding kids and calling them in and talking to them. But there aren't enough resources to be able to have as many counselors as we need to devote time specifically to ensuring the wellness of all of our kids across the board. You know, mental health obviously is a huge issue in our society and in our schools right now. And teachers are being asked a lot of times to do more to be able to address that. I know for myself, I'm happy to do that as much as I possibly can. But I'm also not a counselor.
Right.
I do up to the level that I can, and if there's kids that are dealing with things, you know, I'm there to listen to them and talk to them, and so many other teachers I see, we're all doing that all the time. I can't even tell you how many days that school gets out and I have kids that are coming to talk to me, or during lunch or during prep time, the kids are coming to talk to me about things, and it's 4:30 and I'm like, oh, I actually need to get some grading done and lesson planning for the next couple of days, but I'm not going to turn a kid away that's been struggling with things that needs to talk about stuff because I have lesson plans and grading to do. I'll probably do that stuff when I should be sleeping. But we need more resources like that to be able to say, hey, here are some kids that have some issues that they need help with. I'll do what I can. Every teacher around me will do what they can. Our counselors will do what they can. But I think we could do a lot more.
So what is the passion or interest that you had on day one that you make sure that you still carry with you?
Making school a place that kids want to be, where they feel safe and comfortable and able to be themselves, and to find out what that even means. You know, a lot of our kids are growing up and learning who they are and who they're going to be. And I remember that I got into teaching because I wanted to make a difference. I did a lot of things, you know, before I became a teacher, and was always kind of looking for that fulfillment at the end of the day, that the time that I spent doing what I did today actually mattered in some way, more than a paycheck. Teaching really from day one for me has been always about that. And I ask myself every day, since day one, when I leave school at the end of the day, every day I ask myself, would I have wanted to be a kid in my class today? Mm-hmm. And the answer should always be yes. The answer isn't always yes. There are days when I say, nah, I'm not sure, man. I don't know if I would have been all that happy being in my class today. And what that allows me to do is to reflect on why not, and to say, okay, then if that's something that I would not have enjoyed as a student, then I need to change that and I need to make it so that it would. And every kid's not going to enjoy the same stuff.
Yeah.
But trying to improve my practice all the time to make sure that kids are learning, that kids are loved and supported, and that they have a place where they feel like they belong, like they want to be there. That's the passion that drives me all the time, is just to say, on those days when I'm exhausted and tired and could very easily just kind of write it in the next day and look up something, just here, just do this, I'm tired. The passion that I have for what I do prevents me from being able to do that. It's when I end up staying up a lot later, spending a lot more time putting all this energy into something that I'm going to do, because I know that tomorrow this is what I need them to learn. If I teach it this way because I'm too exhausted, they're not going to learn that. I'm not going to want to be there. They're not going to want to be there. So that's the passion that I have for my kids and for their well-being and their learning and their happiness and everything. That's what keeps me going. And then trying to picture for, you know, my daughter's 11, and I always try to think about, like, what I would want for my daughter in school. Mm-hmm. I try to teach every kid that comes into my room and provide for them in the way that I would want teachers to do for my daughter. And knowing that a lot of my kids come from environments and homes and backgrounds and things that are not what my daughter comes from, and that may need things, you know, different than what my daughter would need. And being able to meet kids where they're at and to say that if my daughter were in a situation like you're in, what would she need? Mm-hmm. That's what I should be giving to every kid that comes in any way that I can. So that's always kind of, for me, what keeps me going, is just knowing that every kid needs something from me. I got to find out what that is that kid needs and give everything I have to making sure that kid gets what it is that they need from me.
Robert Hand is the 2019 Washington State Teacher of the Year. Robert, thanks so much for dropping by.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Tracy Castro-Gill is the Puget Sound Educational Services District 121 Regional Teacher of the Year, and she's the Director of the Ethnic Studies Program at Seattle Public Schools. Congratulations on being named Regional Teacher of the Year for 2019.
Thank you.
If you could do one thing to improve teaching across Washington State, what would you change?
Well, as the Ethnic Studies Program Manager, I would require that all teachers and administrators, educators, anybody who works with children in our state would be required to have racial equity and racial literacy training. Mm-hmm. Racial literacy is something that I just learned about a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. We assume that people in education specifically understand the history and the context of racial discrimination and bias in schools, and that's a false assumption to make.
Yes.
A lot of people don't understand how that was created or where it comes from or even how they play a part in it. And so I think we need to increase racial literacy for all educators in our state. We can't talk about a statewide ethnic studies initiative until we get to that. And so one thing I'm doing in my role now as ethnic studies program manager is creating and delivering professional development on, you know, the foundations for ethnic studies like racial equity literacy and culturally responsive teaching, because before you get to that, you can't really do ethnic studies. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I would change. I feel like a lot of educators are trying to get there on their own. Mm-hmm. In my district specifically, especially with our union, we have the Center for Race and Equity, and Marquita Princing is the director for that. We are working together to build that capacity with educators, but there's nothing in our district for administrators to build that capacity. And so right now we're seeing a bottom-up method to build that capacity, but it has to be both. It has to be top-down also, because the teachers who aren't on board yet aren't going to be on board until somebody tells them that that's an expectation, not something that they can opt into. That would be what I would change. I mean, there are lots of other things, but I feel like the other things that I would change can't happen until that happens first.
To expand on that a little bit, if we were to talk to the legislature and say to them, hey, we need to invest in this thing or that thing, if you could pick one thing for them to invest in other than teacher salaries, of course, what would you tell them for 2019?
Yeah, it would be professional development opportunities on racial equity and racial justice. I keep saying equity, but that word has been so co-opted to so many different things.
Maybe we should define it.
Yeah, and so that's why I say racial equity literacy. And you have to specifically say racial equity, not just equity, because when you say equity, it could be like disabilities or gender or sexuality, which are all very important. But we also know that once you add the term race in there, it changes how we're going to approach something, as it should, because people of different racial and ethnic backgrounds require different services. That's what I would say to invest in. And when we talk about closing gaps, I believe that the gaps are artificially created because of racial prejudice and racial bias. And so if we really dig into that and try to understand how that happened, closing the gaps would be kind of a side effect of that. You know, I think we should stop focusing so much on the gaps themselves and start focusing on what created the gaps.
So what is the passion or interest you had on day one that you make sure that you still carry with you?
Yeah, so I grew up biracial in Southern California, and I did not have an educator of color until I was in college. And in Southern California, I've been using the term criminal. That's criminal.
Yeah.
But in Southern California, I didn't have an educator of color. My father is Mexican-American, and my mom is white in Southern California, and I didn't speak Spanish because of the history of racism and bias against people who spoke Spanish. It was illegal when my grandfather was going to school, so he didn't teach any of his children to speak Spanish because he thought it would be better for them. And so I grew up kind of not knowing where I fit in that culture and that community. I always kept that with me as an educator, not only the identity and having a person of color as a teacher, but understanding why, because I never understood why I didn't speak Spanish until I was in college and had an ethnic studies course and learned about like the Zoot Suit Riots and the LA 13 and the protests to get ethnic studies in schools. Mm-hmm. I want my students to not have that experience. If there's a student of color who's experiencing poverty or homelessness or their parents are in prison or whatever the reason is, or even if they're doing well, they need to understand how they got there. It's because a lot of students will internalize that and feel like that's something wrong with them, like I did.
Yeah.
That's also criminal. My boss, Kyle Kinoshita, he uses the term culture of power, and we have to teach into the culture of power so that students understand the circumstances in the world that have led to where they are now.
Tracy Castro-Gill is the Puget Sound Educational Service District Regional Teacher of the Year for 2019. Tracy, congratulations, and thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.
Ryan Healy is the Capital Region Educational Services District 113 Regional Teacher of the Year. He teaches leadership and character development at Ridgeline Middle School in the Yelm School District. Congratulations on being named 2019 Regional Teacher of the Year.
Thanks, Eric. It's pretty neat. Super surreal, but I feel really honored to get to represent my school and district and my region.
What would you say is your teaching philosophy?
I think relationships matter. Building them with people is really all that life is. And so in a classroom setting, building relationships with kids and colleagues to help kids get the content and information they need and the skills they need is really at the core of what we're doing every day. And I also think, you know, we teach about concepts like unconditional love and character and all these things in our classes. But I think part of my job in philosophy is just to love whoever shows up. Like, I don't get to decide who's going to show up in my life in general, and particularly in a school setting, and it's my job to treat them well, no matter who they are or what they're bringing. So that's my general philosophy.
Nice. How do you operationalize that?
Well, I mean, I think, one, it's just seeking understanding about people. I have a friend named Houston who likes to talk about empathy being asking meaningful questions and listening to answers. So I spend a lot of time asking people about themselves, and I really listen to what they say. And I think the more you know about people, the more you can serve them with students, with colleagues, with parents and community members as well. But I really just try to spend time being curious about the people, because what we're doing is never as important as who we're doing it with. Mm-hmm. But if we remember that, then we can do a lot of things together and get a lot of cool stuff done in people's lives and accomplish a lot of things in a lot of different areas.
What would you say is the thing you're most proud of that you've accomplished in the classroom?
Kids feeling like they can be vulnerable and open about who they are and feel like that my room is a place where they feel safe doing that. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm able to do that with a group, I feel like that is the biggest accomplishment. And then I've been fortunate enough to be in contact with enough former students to know that some of the character skills, like character is the combination of all your daily choices, some of those skills that they've learned are things they use as adults. Mm-hmm. I had dinner with a former student last night who is using so many of those things they learned as a ninth grader in school to make choices now as an adult. I think that feels like a win for all of us. Yeah, it feels cool that I was part of it. I don't really think I'm the reason it happened. I didn't do that work. But I did provide a space where that work could be explored. My school supported me to do that. And so I think that's cool. But yeah, I think that kids feeling that they are like accepted in a place and also that they have skills they can use forever.
Ryan Healy is the Capital Region Educational Service District 113 Regional Teacher of the Year. Ryan, thank you so much for dropping by.
Thanks, Eric. It was a pleasure.
Christine Mars is the Educational Services District 123 Regional Teacher of the Year. She teaches second grade at Lincoln Elementary in the Kennewick School District. And Matthew Brown is the North Central Educational Services District 171 Regional Teacher of the Year. He teaches music at Manson Middle School and Manson High School in the Manson School District.
Matthew, what would you say is your teaching philosophy?
I would say my overbearing teaching philosophy is positivity changes everything. I truly believe that when we believe every single student that walks into our room can and will succeed, that will happen. Something that I do is I try and help my students to talk positively about themselves, both in how they talk about themselves and how they talk about their future. Mm. I've really focused on that in the past few years, and it has changed my classroom into a place where we continually push each other to do our best and to be successful.
So the students become each other's cheerleaders, basically?
Yeah. Well, and not just each other's, but themselves as well. I think in our society, when I listen to conversations, it is crazy how quickly we go to the negative and what we can't do and what we shouldn't do, as opposed to what we have yet to learn. I try and provide that excitement and that positive future thinking mentality to my students.
Christine, I'm going to go to you. What would you say of all your accomplishments that you're most proud of what you've done in the classroom?
I would say that the one accomplishment I'm most proud of is creating engaging lessons for my students, where they're so excited to see what's going to happen in the classroom each day that they come to school because they want to versus coming to school because they have to. And I have done a little bit of everything. I'm kind of known for my costumes.
Really?
That I wear in class, yes. Everything from a bacon costume.
Bacon?
Bacon. Everybody loves bacon.
Sure.
Actually, that was a story that we read as part of a book tasting where we exposed the students to different genres, and they had just quick little snippets of books and then got to share out. But yeah, bacon, 100-year-old lady for the 100th day of school. Yeah, you name it. So just that engagement piece, I'm really proud of just the way I look at students and what gets them excited about being at school versus having to come to school each day.
That's fantastic. Matt, what about you? What are you most proud of?
A few years ago, I had this idea. I get these ideas either while I'm running or in the shower. And this idea kind of culminated in my brain. We live in a time right now when so many of our curricula are starting to connect with each other. And I wanted to find a way to make that happen in our school in a way that we can present the connectivity of learning. I came up with the idea of the collaborative experience. And I presented this to my staff a few years ago. And the idea behind it is that we would choose a theme to kind of focus on, whether it be space or landscapes or culture, just choosing a theme that every single subject can kind of focus on. And as students go from classroom to classroom, they find not that we are our own little subject areas, but really how everything is connecting. What we did the first year is the art department and shop department really jumped on board with the music, which is why I teach department. We had this night of learning, the collaborative experience. So the audience would come into the concert and they'd see all these shop projects that had to do with landscapes, and they could feel it. They could ask students about how they made them. And then when it came time for the concert, each of the bands and chorus would perform their piece. And as they were performing, we would shut off all the lights, and then student artwork that related to the piece of music we were playing would be projected on a huge movie screen behind us. So really trying to bring that connectivity to learning. We've been doing it for about, I think, 5, 6, 7 years now, and each year we tweak it just a little bit more. I'm hoping that it's something our education system can really grasp onto.
Yeah, definitely seeing how it all fits together. That's huge.
Yeah.
Congrats on coming up with that.
Thank you.
Christine, if you could do one thing to improve teaching across Washington State, what would you do?
I think the thing that I would like to change the most in Washington State is the way we look at our students as just a score or a number as we progress through the year, and really look at the whole child and their potential, not just for learning, but for success in life. Because a lot of times we just go in there and it's all about, you know, hitting those targets all year long and getting to that number, the magic number. But the magic number isn't magic for each child. And so that would be the one thing I think I would want us to change the most, getting to where we can look at the whole child and meet them where they are.
That makes a lot of sense. If you were to speak to the legislature, because the session is going to be coming up soon, and you were to ask them to fund one thing, I mean, other than teacher salaries, of course, what would you ask them to fund?
Well, I came from a Title I school, so I can say without a doubt the one thing I would ask them to fund is mental health issues. We see it with our students in trauma in every single classroom, in every single school, across every district, and across our state, across our nation. And it's a growing problem. So that would be the one thing, absolutely. Students in trauma and mental health issues.
Matt, what about for you? If you could change one thing in Washington State in education, what would you change?
Currently, we talk about education with a failure mindset. We talk about failing schools or failing students. And I think we need to eradicate that from our language. There are absolutely no failures in education. There's only growth potential. And every single student has the potential for growth. And we just have to take them from where they are and find a way to help them grow. When I've done that, I've found more success in my program. Yeah, eradicating the word failure from how we talk about education.
I like that. Christine, if you could go back in time and you could talk to yourself on the first day you were a teacher in a classroom, what advice would you give yourself?
The advice I would give myself on that first day is to let go of the concept that you have to just teach content and to really get to the root of what students want to learn. I found that the most powerful lessons that I've had in my classroom are those moments that we step out of the box and move away from the teacher edition book and let the students drive the instruction by asking authentic questions that they're curious about. And I just think it brings about so much more power for the students when we do that. So that's what I would tell myself on that first day. Let go of the teacher edition and get to those authentic lessons that the students really, truly want to learn about.
That is great. And Matt, what would you tell yourself if you could travel back in time?
I was also content-driven my first couple of years and, you know, really asking why can't students do specific tasks. And I found when I really focused on making those personal connections and instead focusing on getting students excited mm-hmm. about learning and maybe more interested in the experience or journey of learning, that's where the real magic happens. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they were better at the content when I focused less on the content, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of zen.
It is.
It's like trying without trying.
That's right.
I love that. Christine, what is the passion or interest you had on day one that you make sure that you still carry with you?
So the whole reason I went into teaching is my husband was murdered in 2004. Mm. And so just as a way to give back to the community and to carry on my husband's legacy, mm. I just knew at that very moment that I wanted to become a teacher. So that is the one thing I would say that I bring back to the classroom is I'm trying to do it for the right reasons. I want to make a change in those students' lives who have come to me with trauma and to understand that every day they aren't always capable of doing their best learning. They're surviving. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's the one thing that really has impacted me the most and continues to impact me and to move and drive me in my teaching career.
My son has a background in trauma as well. And so, all the supports that he receives in the classroom, I so appreciate it.
And it was interesting because I was able to connect. You know, I went back to college and here I was in trauma. It was hard. It was not an easy journey. And then realizing as I continued in my career that my boys were then students in trauma, it really pushes me to meet my students at a different level.
Christine Mars is the ESD 123 Regional Teacher of the Year, and Matt Brown is the North Central ESD 171 Regional Teacher of the Year. Christine, Matt, thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Susan Douglas is the Northeast Educational Services District 101 Regional Teacher of the Year. She teaches STEM, which is Science, Technology, Education, and Math, and Special Education at Elmira Elementary in the Elmira School District. And Karen Doran is the Olympic Educational Services District 114 Regional Teacher of the Year. She teaches highly capable 5th and 6th graders at Roosevelt Elementary in the Port Angeles School District. Susan, what is your teaching philosophy?
So my teaching philosophy is really about generating hope through educational opportunities and learning experiences. When students come to us, we don't know if they're ready to learn. We just know that they're in our classroom. Some students are ready to learn. Some students are needing emotional support, just safe environments and shelter. And so they come to us in a variety of places. And then it's meeting them there and then taking them forward. So it's the idea that we're building on who they are and their ideas. And in teaching and exposing them to new experiences and new opportunities, they create new ideas. It just takes them to a place where they have hope for whatever manifesting their ideas or going forward.
And how do you operationalize that?
So I think the first thing you have to do to operationalize that is build relationships with students, hear their stories, and validate their previous experiences, whether that's they come from a traditional or what used to be a traditional family and both parents are there in the home, or whether they're from a diverse background with maybe many family members in the house or different experiences, geographic, different economic perspectives or minority status, any of those things, they bring their own story. And so that story then opens them up in different ways for the educational experiences. So hands-on, authentic learning, student-focused learning, taking their ideas and moving it forward instead of even coming in and expecting that there's a cookie cutter that I'm going to be able to use with all the students.
And so, Karen, what accomplishment in the classroom are you most proud of?
The biggest accomplishment is not only in the classroom, but it's also the work that I continue to strive to do within our district, and it's directly related to looking at math and even more specifically math instruction and providing kids with opportunities to do math instead of just experiencing that oftentimes what we experienced in school, which is that torture of, you know, the 40 problems and you do all of them. And but just giving my kids a different take on math and providing that love and developing that passion for what it can do for you in your life.
So, Susan, if you could change one thing in education across Washington State, what would you do?
I think that we talk about standards and curriculum and methodology and pedagogy and theory. I think one of the things that I'd like to see different or more implemented on a more reliable basis is that as teachers, and we want to be treated as professionals, that we rise to that profession and look at curriculum as a starting place, but that we really see the individual student having both a background in special ed and in elementary education. All students come in at a place, and so it doesn't matter if they have an IEP. We're looking at really individualizing their education progression, meeting them where they're at. And we look at curriculum as best practices, but curriculum comes in a box, but students don't.
Right.
And so really understanding that professional responsibility and administrative responsibility of allowing teachers to be the professionals that we want them to be, we want to pay them to be, and allowing them to be that creative and courageous and risk-taking, and then letting them develop that passion in their students as well. They're courageous and risk-taking themselves.
And on a similar note, the legislative session is going to be starting soon. For 2019, if you had to pick one thing for legislators to fund, what would you ask them to do other than teacher salaries?
It's been identified by the Office of Superintendent, but in a rural school district, we have limited resources, and I think mental health is an area where we really need to start addressing students in an elementary setting, as well as the counselors as they go through middle school and high school. But the increasing needs of teachers, that's not part of who we are, and to deal with anxiety disorders or eating disorders in kindergarten and first grade, they're there. And giving the support to even the smallest community, because we really don't want to leave those children or say that, well, this child in this rural community, there's no mental health professionals in the area, and these often exist in families that don't have the means to get 90 miles to make this appointment. So to really make sure that we're providing for all students across the state in that mental health care.
And Karen, what about for you? If you could change one thing in our education system in Washington State, what would you change?
This has come up a lot over the last couple of weeks as we've been meeting and talking. And I do think what Susan has said in addressing the mental health is key. If I look back in the last 5 years of my teaching career, I've been teaching for almost 19 now, and for the last 5 years, we have seen a shift. We've seen a shift in how kids are coming to school and their ability to function when they get there, and it's directly related to mental health and what's going on in our communities. And so providing opportunities not just for our kids but for our families and supporting them as they go through challenges and helping them learn how to support their children. So much of what Susan said is true. Valuing that, I think, is what we need our legislators to really understand, is that we do more than teach math and science and reading. We're teaching the whole child, and we really need that support and that help. Those nurses and psychologists and counselors are key.
Susan, if you could travel back in time and talk to yourself on day one in the classroom, what advice would you give yourself?
I think that when I first started years ago, I started just in special education. So my encounters with that were the many roles that that plays and the paperwork. And that patience in dealing with all those different facets of where special education is, that you have both instructional and administrative parts of it. Mm-hmm. Just that patience and remembering that it's really about the kid and that family, and making sure that, in my mind, that's what special education is advocating for both the child and the family and their needs in our educational system.
Karen, what about for you? If you could travel back in time, what advice would you give yourself?
Well, my biggest learning has been in really understanding the value of building relationships with families and building relationships with kids and the impact that has on your ability to teach, because you're not just teaching the child, you're really teaching the whole family. And so I think that's what I would definitely go back and rethink, the time spent on curriculum versus the time spent on relationships and valuing the student as a whole, not just for what they can do in the classroom.
And finally, Susan, what is the passion or interest you had on day one that you make sure you still carry with you?
I think for me, it's staying focused on the student, on the kids. There are a lot of things that happen throughout the day. There are a lot of things that happen throughout the year. And our job every day is to go into our classroom and be present for our students. And that means you may have to leave those other agendas or your ego or those other issues at the door. We ask the same thing for our students when they come into our room, not to bring in the problems from recess or whatever else. When they're in their classroom, that they're present. And I think that for me, that's the passion. There's times where teaching can be overwhelming and exhausting and frustrating at different levels. But every day when I walk into my room, I know exactly why I'm there.
That is why both of you are Regional Teachers of the Year. That's fantastic. Susan Douglas is the Northeast Educational Services District 101 Regional Teacher of the Year. And Karen Doran is the Olympic ESD 114 Regional Teacher of the Year. Susan, Karen, thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you very much. Thanks for what you do.
Kimberly Miller is the Educational Services District 112 Regional Teacher of the Year. She teaches Family and Consumer Sciences and is an advisor for Skills USA at Woodland High School in the Woodland School District. And Michael Clinton is the Educational Services District 105 Regional Teacher of the Year. He teaches Biology and Physics at White Swan High School in the Mount Adams School District. Kimberly, I'll start with you. What accomplishment in the classroom are you most proud of?
Hi. Most people would think the accomplishment I'm most proud of would be curriculum, lessons we teach, but really it's the community service my students do. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of catering in the community. We help with our food bank. They just got through with a food drive, and they also did empty bowls, which they earned $5,381 to help the needy in our community.
Nice. And Michael, what about for you? What are you most proud of that you've accomplished in the classroom?
I would have to say that what I'm most proud of is the work that we've done this last year with our freshman seminar class. Mm-hmm. Freshman seminar is a class that we created for freshmen, all freshmen take, that has to do with them really looking and digging into the high school and beyond plan and really thinking about what they want to be. And of course, that changes, and it'll change every single year. But the goal is to kind of get them in that mindset to be thinking about what they want to be.
Kimberly, if you could change one thing in our education system in Washington State, what would you change?
As a career and technical ed teacher for too long, I feel the emphasis has been that students must be prepared to go to college without an emphasis on what careers could they do. How could we help them get prepared for those careers? And what are we doing to change our educational system to meet their needs rather than just college bound?
And so if you were to say to the 2019 legislature, fund one thing, would it be more money for CTE?
It would be more money for job shadows and internships and bringing industry into our schools to help get our kids aligned for the workforce.
And Michael, what about for you? If you could change one thing in our education system in Washington State, what would you change?
I think I'd have to start with standardized testing. I think that the way that we teach kids is different here on the west side than on the east side. Expecting kids in rural areas to know things that are a bit different and maybe just in the way that we present the standardized test is inequitable. Maybe finding different ways to test kids on the things that they know, especially in things like biology, which I teach. Mm-hmm. How can we go about doing that that makes it equitable for Native American students as well as those that are on the west side?
And if you were to say to the legislature to fund one thing in 2019, what would you suggest that they fund?
I think that funding something that would maybe look at state testing and how we can make it equitable for those on the east side of the state, and especially in my community. My kids know a lot about biology, but when it comes to the state test, they don't do so well. And so how can we make it a fair test for those kids? I think spending some money on that might actually help.
So, Kimberly, what advice would you give yourself if you could travel back in time and talk to yourself on your first day in the classroom?
I first of all would ask for a mentor to help me go through the ropes and figure things out. I would also learn to say no. I think as a first-year teacher, things get piled on us and we get a lot of burnout for teachers. I know I coached all three seasons and led a club and taught out of my content area. I didn't learn to say no very well that first year.
Wow.
But I felt that's what I need to do to get a job, and so I did it all. I would definitely put more time into my content area than trying to hit all those things.
And Michael, what about for you? If you could travel back in time, what advice would you give yourself on day one?
I think I would tell myself to slow down. I would tell myself that the most important thing is to really get to know the kids before we start on the content. It really is imperative that you kind of have a feel for each individual kid and how they best learn, what their interests are. Really get to know the kid in that light, then try to feed them the content and get them to where we want them to be in their skills.
Kimberly Miller is the ESD 112 Regional Teacher of the Year. And Michael Clinton is the ESD 105 Regional Teacher of the Year. Kimberly, Michael, thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for listening. To learn more about League of Education Voters or to support our work, please visit educationvoters.org.